Hello, friends, and welcome to Christ Church Uniting. Welcome to this space, be it real and virtual. Welcome to this gathering time. I invite you to be present here and to be here in a spirit of peace. My name is Liz Levitt. I'm pastor of this congregation, and I know that we are bringing a lot with us into this time. You know, I know we're bringing all the cares of the world, and I know they are heavy today. I know we are bringing many cares in our own hearts and about those dear to us, and I know those are many. I know we're bringing the cares of this community of faith itself in a time of change, and I know that's a heavy burden too. And the good news is all of those things are welcome. I think that's what's wonderful about a community of faith like this one, the belief that when we come into the presence of God, all that we are and all that's in our hearts, all of that, everyone is welcome. Of course, I have a poem to speak to what we're trying to do today. I thought we would hit up a few old favorites in our time upcoming in the next few weeks, and I think this speaks well to this moment. This is Mary Oliver, an invitation. So let this be our invitation today into our time of worship. Do you have time to linger for just a little while out of your busy and very important day for the goldfinches that have gathered in a field of thistles for a musical battle to see who can sing the highest note or the lowest or the most expressive of mirth or the most tender? Their strong, blunt beaks drink the air as they strive melodiously, not for your sake and not for mine, and not for the sake of winning, but for sheer delight and gratitude. Believe us, they say. It is a serious thing just to be alive on this fresh morning in the broken world. I beg of you, do not walk by without pausing to attend to this rather ridiculous performance. It could mean something. It could mean everything. It could be what Rilke meant when he wrote, "You must change your life." Sometimes I think coming here together and proclaiming these words of hope does seem like a rather ridiculous performance, right? As the world seems to be coming apart around us, but I think it can mean something. In fact, it can mean everything that we are gathered here with the spirit of grace and with the spirit of life and with the spirit that promises God's presence in our midst as often as we seek God who brings peace and grace. So I just invite you in that spirit to be here and to be with us alive on this fresh morning in this broken world and to enter into this good news that we have. As always, we are going to start off with music. This, another invitation for us to bring ourselves fully into God's presence. Come bring your burdens to God. I'm going to turn it over to Diane, Marion, and Kalua. We can indeed come with our burdens to God, knowing that God will greet us and bring us peace. And so I want us to just live into that sort of symbolically by making a sign of peace over our hearts and catching someone else's eye or just sort of breathing deep to ourselves and saying, "Peace of Christ be with you and also with you." So the peace of Christ be with you and also with you. And now, Zelda, you are just in time. Excellent. It's time when we invite some kids to either draw close to their screens, type that they're there in the comments, for you to pay attention, Zelda, and for just us to have a few moments together here. And I want to show you two very special things. Actually, I'm going to start with this because obviously this is the best. So here you are. Do you know what this is? It's a horse, yeah. I like that it has glittery hair. So, and it's nice, and wow, somebody has braided its tail. Very good. You say it's a palomino. That's wonderful, a palomino with purple glittery hair. So I think that last week I shared some kind of news with the church, and I'm sure that you heard that, and maybe if you were at home, you heard that, or your parents shared with you that I'm going to be leaving soon. In just about a month, I'm going to be headed off. And so I wanted to remind everybody and you of two really important things to keep in our hearts when we're thinking about this, right? And maybe, you know, I think sometimes you can be a good leader for the rest of us because you are very accustomed to change. Every year you go to a new class and you have new friends and new teachers. And so you've learned how to do that pretty well. And you'll probably do it, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12, 15, 20 more times, depending on how much you want to go to school. Some of us never stop. But one thing I want to remind you of is by bringing this silly horse here today is that there used to be something long before now in the church, and it was called circuit riding. Anybody was alive when they were doing circuit riding? No? Okay. So before, in the former times, you wouldn't have a pastor like me who stayed all the time. Pastors would just ride around on their horse everywhere, and you never knew who was going to show up or whether they were going to show up that Sunday. They just kind of rode into town, and they told you the message, and then they rode away to the next church, right? And that was kind of how it went, and the church went on and sang its songs, and it was kind of an exciting thing to think about who is going to ride into town and what are they going to have to say, those circuit riders. There was probably a lot more kind of fire and brimstone stuff going on then too, and we've moved on from that, thankfully, but I just want to remind us that the church has always sort of, like you and your school journey, been in times of change and been willing and able to accept new messages that come by very different means, including horses, palominos with glittery hair. So that's one piece of good news. I don't think you'll go from here to circuit riding. I just want to assure you all of that, but I want to remind us that that's our heritage. And then the second thing I want to do is, do you know what this is? Well, this is something I keep my earrings on. I'm not sure if that's what it was intended for in the beginning, but it's meant to represent like a tree. And the other good news I want to remind you of is that God says that we abide in God like a vine, that we're actually like branches, each branch is of a plant, which means a couple cool things. One is that we're always connected to God no matter where we go, which is super cool. And the other is that, you know, if somebody's over here and somebody's over there, they're actually still connected, right? And that's sort of what we believe about our identity in Jesus, that it really brings us together as one. So while we feel sad, oh no, somebody's moving over here that I really love, our hearts are really drawn together as one person in Jesus. So I think that's some good news. So I want you to go forth and be thinking about circuit riding and the fact that we are connected like a tree. How does that sound? Awesome. All right. Let me know what your thoughts about that are later. I don't want this to fall down in the middle of my sermon, so I think I'm going to put it down here. But I want to bless you and say a prayer, bless for our little ones, and to know that God goes with you wherever you go. So I give you that, and I wish you peace. Amen. Thanks, kids. Our scripture text from this morning comes from the 49th chapter of Genesis. I haven't put any verse numbers here. I've put selections because even though this is a little bit of unorthodox, I have edited this text down for brevity it's still really long, but it would have been twice as long. So I'm just going to try to give you a flavor of what's in this. Chuck loves long scripture readings, and so this one's for you. Do not fall asleep. This is the goodbye speech of Jacob, or Israel, one of the great patriarchs of the faith. And this is what he has to say as his sons are gathered around his deathbed. Okay, are you ready? This is uplifting stuff today. Okay, one person in the back is ready. Genesis 49. Listen here for what's being said in this text, and certainly for what the Spirit is saying to you and to the church right now. Then Jacob called his sons and said, "Gather around that I may tell you what will happen to you in the days to come. Assemble and hear, O sons of Jacob. Listen to Israel, your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, and the first fruits of my vigor, excelling in rank and excelling in power. Unstable as water, you shall no longer excel. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Weapons of violence are their swords. May I never come into their council. May I not be joined to their company. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be upon the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down before you. Zebulun shall settle at the shore of the sea. Issachar is a strong donkey lying between sheepfolds. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. He shall be a snake by the roadside, a viper along the path that bites the horse's heels so that its rider falls backwards. I wait for your salvation, O Lord. Gad shall be raided by raiders, but he shall raid at their heels. Asher's food shall be rich, and he shall provide royal delicacies. Naphtali is a doe let loose that bears lovely fawns. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a spring. His branches run over the wall. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf, in the morning devouring the prey and at evening dividing the spoil. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father said to them when he blessed them, blessing each one of them with a suitable blessing. Then he charged them, saying, I am about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my ancestors in the cave in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave in the field at Machpelah near Mamre in the land of Canaan, in the field that Abraham bought from Ephron the Hittite as a burial site. There Abraham and his wife Sarah were buried. There Isaac and his wife Rebekah were buried. There I buried Leah. The field and the cave that it is in were purchased from the Hittites. When Jacob had ended his charge to his son, he drew up his feet into the bed, breathed his last, and was gathered to his people. Holy wisdom, holy word, thanks be to God. So maybe you have had this experience. That you're at some kind of event, like maybe it's a goodbye party or some kind of retirement celebration, and you make a big deal out of saying a very meaningful goodbye to whomever this event is celebrating. Maybe you shed a few tears, you share some deep words that are in your heart, you say, goodbye, my friend. And then you're getting your coat, and you run into that same person again at the coat check, and you say, oh, goodbye, right? And then you go into the parking lot, and you're going in your car, and there they are again, right? Have you ever had this where you just have to say goodbye too many times, and it gets very awkward until you're finally like, okay, bye, see ya, you know, take care. So I've been thinking about that a little bit since I sort of dropped this bomb last week that we'll be heading off to the next chapter of my life. And I was thinking, how do we avoid it feeling like that, right? How do I avoid getting up here for 4 more weeks to say goodbye, goodbye, meaningful goodbye, goodbye, see you next week? So this is what I think about, right? I don't know what you think about 3 o'clock in the morning. This is what I think about. And so I decided something. I decided, let's do one last totally off program, off the wall, non-lectionary sermon series that you know I love to do, right? And I said, that would be a fitting tribute. What should we talk about, though? What should we talk about? And I thought, I know what we should talk about. We should do a sermon series on the great farewell speeches of the huge characters in the Bible, right? What did they say as they were about to sort of cast off either into the next life or onto their next mission? This is the kind of thing I tell my lectionary group of colleagues, and they think, mm-hmm, that's a great idea. And I want to do this because, and I said this last week, I do want in the next few weeks to really be sharing with you some of the things that I've been most grateful for during my years of ministry here. And one thing that is just at the top of my list that I feel most thankful for is that you are a great congregation to preach to. Did you know that? You are like the most fun congregation to preach to that I've just ever experienced in my life. You are curious and responsive and intelligent and wise, and the conversations that we have in response to preaching up here just really have enriched my ministry. A lot of times people say, give me compliments about my preaching, and I always say, you know, it's a lot about the congregation that you're preaching to. And so if I am any good, or if you have ever thought that, then thank yourselves, because I think it is being in conversation with you that has made me a decent preacher, and thinking with you and talking to you and hearing your stories. So I feel thankful for that. And now we're going to go on this little journey of the great farewell speeches of all the patriarchs as they die in the Bible. It's going to be wonderful. And the first one, as you just heard, is Jacob. Does anybody remember Jacob from Sunday school? Okay, somebody's like, oh, yeah, okay, Jacob, I'm just going to give you a quick summary, Jacob. This is the son of Isaac and Rebekah, right? There was Abraham and Sarah, and then there was Isaac and Rebekah, and then there's Jacob, right? He's the twin of Esau, right? Jacob, who schemed with his mother to cheat his older brother out of his inheritance, and then fled to his uncle's home where he agreed to work as an indentured servant for 7 years so that he could marry his cousin Rachel, who was very beautiful. But instead, he got tricked by his uncle into marrying his first cousin, Leah, who had a great personality, and then worked another 7 years so he actually could marry his love, Rachel, and somewhere in there also took on two concubines, additional wives, which explains why he was able to have 12 sons, including Joseph, who had a technicolor dream coat and got sold into slavery by his jealous brothers and eventually became a confidant of the Pharaoh of Egypt, where his brothers eventually came because of a famine in Canaan. And Joseph saw and recognized and forgave them and brought the whole family down from Egypt to ride out the famine in style, which is why when Jacob lies dying, he's dying in Egypt, gathered together with his sons. Okay, so that's Jacob. Remember all that? I should teach Sunday school. I should just say, forget this pastoring, man. I'm going right to second grade Sunday school. So now Jacob is at the end. And what I read earlier is what he has to say to his 12 sons at the end. And what I found so interesting kind of reading this is that he calls it a blessing. He says, I will give my sons a blessing. How these things are a blessing is a little bit of a mystery to me. Was anybody really sort of tuned in while I was watching? Like, some of the stuff isn't that good. This is not what I would want my own parent to say to me at their deathbed. Reuben, unstable as water, you shall no longer excel. Like, that's just like a little bit of a downer, okay? And he goes on, Simeon and Levi, weapons of violence are their swords. May I never come into their council. May I not be joined to their company. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them. A blessing. Now, Judah, we feel like he's going to be okay. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet. He shall have his brothers bow to him. That sounds all right. Issachar is a strong donkey, so he bowed his shoulder to the burden and became a slave. Not that great. This one really confused me, and I couldn't find an extra description of it. Anyway, Naphtali is a doe let loose that bears lovely fawns. Not really sure what that's about. Joseph, right, you could tell Joseph's going to be A-okay in the end, because Jacob goes on forever about Joseph as if he didn't learn anything from before when he favored Joseph and his brothers kidnapped him and tried to kill him. But right here at his deathbed, he goes on, by the hands of the mighty one, by the name of the shepherd, the rock, the God of your father, who will help you, bless you with blessings from heaven and blessings from the deep and blessings from the womb and blessing of your father and stronger blessings in the mountains and bounty, may they be on the head of Joseph. On the brow of him who is set apart from his brothers. Right? Like, I just feel a little bit like that's going to cause some tension at the wake there, right? bless you with a million blessings. Naphtali, we don't know what's going to happen to you. And Issachar, you're going to end up a slave. And Reuben, you're not going to excel. Now, a lot of these things we should say, if you've done a lot of reading in Genesis, are based on the history of this family, right? On things that have actually happened in the past that seem to be informing Jacob's perceptions of what will happen to their family in the future. Reuben, for instance, let his desires control him and therefore damaged his relationship to his father. That's a little R-rated bit I'll leave for you to read on your own after this. Simeon and Levi were bloodthirsty in their pursuit of their sister's aggressors, right? Which is why Jacob seems to predict that their anger will continue to lead them down an unhelpful path. And Joseph was always a favorite. And I thought about this all week. You know, I'm reading this all week. And then, as I always do, like on Friday, I was like, I should have just stuck with the lectionary, man. We could have talked about Jesus as the bread of life. But I'm thinking about it. And I kept thinking, like, is this really fair? Is this really necessary? Like, how is this? How can you call this a blessing? And what do I do with this as a preacher trying to bless my own people in my own leave-taking? And so I really thought about it and I prayed about it. And what I came to was this. What I thought I would do is I would go through one by one, kind of starting with the people that are physically gathered here and maybe going on to those that I anticipate are gathered online right now. And I would predict your future based on any obvious moral failings that I have observed during my many years here. So whoever would like to go first, just raise your hand. Okay, so we could do that offline later if you like, but I'm not going to do that, of course. But I did have to pass by that to sort of get into a reflection about what this could really mean for us. And I realized that I do actually see something here other than favoritism and pessimism. And that is simply that these statements, they seem to indicate that each one of these many brothers was known to his father. Right? There is something in this text, even though it's a little unsettling, there is something here about intimacy, about being seen and known by someone else exactly as we are, the good and the bad, right? And I think a further thing about intimacy is this, that it allows us to say difficult things to each other. It allows us to say difficult things to each other. Things like, Reuben, your lust will lead you down a dangerous path. Something like, Issachar, your violence will be your downfall, right? That's troubling and unsettling, but it's also intimacy, right? Intimate from the Latin intimus or inmost, intrinsic, but also intimatus, to announce or to make known. So someone with whom we have intimacy is someone who knows us well enough to see the inmost parts of us, but also someone who can announce those things to us in some particular way. And I was thinking about the fact that I'm realizing, of course, that the more intimate we are with someone, the more difficult it is to say goodbye to them because we are giving up a mirror into our inmost selves. So this last gift of Jacob, in a way, is like a look in that mirror where he tells them what he has known of them. And it might seem harsh. I think it is. This is probably, again, not the speech I would want to receive on my parents' deathbed. But I think it also seems, or so I sense after thinking about it a lot this week, it seems beautifully open and honest in a way. I think it speaks to the importance of relationships among all other things. And then it speaks to the continuing task that Jacob's family will have in leading and caring for and shepherding not only their family unit, but the great nation that will come for them, the nation of Israel, right? He's saying these things to them because they will need to continue in their work of being his heirs and leaders to their people. Now, of course, Jacob was preparing to die, right? He gathered his feet up into his bed. I'm not really sure what that means. I have some hypotheses, but I'm not ready to share. He gathers his feet up to his bed and he breathes his last. He is gathered to his ancestors. And of course, all our goodbyes in life are not because of death. We say goodbye to friends when we part ways, Sometimes we have to say goodbye to partners who have ceased to meet our needs. We say goodbye to pastors who move on to other callings. But we also say goodbye to other things, to closely held ideas that, or ideals that no longer serve us. We say goodbye to professions that have lost their joy, to places that we have loved. We say goodbye sometimes to visions of our lives that we know now will no longer come to be. And I think for any of those leave-takings to render us a blessing rather than simply a heartache, it is necessary to start by saying what is true, saying what we know about what has happened and about what might be and about how certain things came about and about what we've lost and gained and hoped for and despaired of and how all those things may inform our future. I think we have to start by saying that and saying what we see in the mirror. And I want to encourage you in your own lives, in whatever ways you are departing from certain things, to simply try the exercise that expresses that kind of honesty, if only to yourself. You know, I think we as individuals, as a community, and as a world are going through a time of immense change, right? Saying goodbye to things like the status quo, to things we had hoped for. And maybe we're not yet ready to say hello to what's next, but I think there is spiritual work to be done in that abyss between those two things. So here, I'm going to do a little practice, do a little homework, show you how it's done. How about that? Have you been thinking about which one of you would like to be reminded of your moral failures? Oh, Rachel, brave volunteer. How about I just hit up us all, okay? So let me just tell you. You know, I have loved, and this is not just blowing smoke, I have loved being the pastor of this church. This place has been a blessing to my life and a blessing to my family and a blessing to my ministry. I think from the first minute I arrived, your openness to me and my vision has been so profound and so affirming, and I will never forget that. You have been, it occurs to me, the ohana who welcomed us to Hawaii and then who welcomed our children into this world, right, and into the church, and I will never forget that. Your willingness to go on a journey with me, allowing me the freedom and creativity to explore new theological and programmatic territory, some of which was pretty out there, I can admit that. Your willingness to go on that journey, I think, was so energizing for me. And I think energizing for this church. And I will never forget that. And finally, I want to say, you know, your trust in me has been a real honor to bear. You know, in our conversations beside hospital beds and in walks on the beach and in coffee shops and in your living rooms, you know, it has been a privilege to walk with you. And I think back and I think that it has been a privilege to be the person with whom we have said difficult things. I think we have said difficult things to each other. We have said things like, I disagree. We have said, I'm not sure what I believe. We have said, you hurt me, and said, I was wrong, and said, I forgive you, and said, I don't know what's ahead. And now we're having to say goodbye, and I think that's another difficult thing. But I'm glad that we can do this together. And I know that part of what's making it hard for us to say goodbye is that familiarity, you know? Like, I realize it's always painful to try to regress to a former stage of intimacy. To try to go from partners to friends is really challenging. It doesn't always work. To try to go to friends to acquaintances can be awkward and fraught. It's like trying to rip off a Band-Aid, right? Like, you've been stuck together in ways that are healing and helpful and important and wonderful, but even the time it right kind of hurts to separate, and I feel that. But I'm also grateful for that discomfort because I think it's a sign of our deep connection, our admiration for each other, and in that is a blessing. One final affirmation is, it's been an honor to serve this church because I believe so profoundly in its mission, right? To bring a progressive witness to this community, and to embody God's inclusive love in this community, and to create a place of welcome for those on so many different steps of the spiritual journey. I think that is important. I think that is unique, and I'm so glad to have been part of it. But there's more. Now this is the other part, right? That was like Judah. This is like Reuben. There will be challenges ahead for this church. You will have to decide if you believe in this witness that we've been working on together as much as I believe in it and as much as my articulation of it. You will have to see that this place is much bigger than my leadership and its gifts much, much bigger than my gifts. And if you do see that, then you will have to engage. And you will have to show up and participate and contribute and most of all to lead, perhaps in more profound ways than you have had to before. Because this church needs you, and this time in the history of the world needs the church. And if you want to continue to say what this church has to say, then you have to lift it up. And from now on, when someone says, "Who can help with this?" you cannot say, "Pastor Liz can help with that. She can do anything." Instead, you will have to say, when someone says, "Who can help?" you will have to say, "Me, I can. I can. Here I am, Lord." I think you will have to prioritize, to reinforce, to renew your connections to each other, not just the each other that you've known for a long, many years, but the each other that includes the other you've not come yet to know. You will have to build your relationship like a web, starting with those strands that run from one to another, not through the central node, right? Each of you will have to decide whether your participation here extends only to the boundary of your own edification, or whether it runs beyond that to support something bigger and something broader and something ultimately much more important. And let me tell you, I know you can do it because I know you so well. You are wise and brave and dedicated and generous and kind and talented and hilarious. And I know that. And I trust that after me, the Spirit will bring another amazing leader into the midst who will help equip you for that task. I know perhaps you can't see that right now, but I can, and if it's okay. If it seems hard, I feel that. I really do. And if you're still too sad, that's okay too. But I really hope that at some point you will find in these encouragements can become a blessing. When you lift your head and see what can become and what will become, you will feel motivated to engage in that blessing in a new way. But wait, there's more. There is one more thing that I know. And that is that there is someone else who knows you even more than I do, and who is with you at this very moment. And of course, that is the loving God. God who has seen you and sees you now and will see you, all of you, every part, and who loves you with a love more profound than you could ever know. That love which, of course, we've come to know in Jesus. I know that God is with you, that God who joins in your shouts of triumph and who hears your whispers of doubt in the middle of the night. I know that that God who knew you from the beginning and that God who will walk with you to the end and beyond, that God is with you now. God who has the most intimate knowledge of your gifts and liabilities and your idiosyncrasies and your hopes and your fears and your worries and your dreams, that God never departs from us. That God remains with you and with me. That God remains within you and within me and among all of us always. And that God which will keep us forever connected through the vine in which we abide, and that is the Christ, that is the blessing among all the good words and the hard words, and that is certainly the blessing that leads us into our future. So I want to assure you of those things and thank you for the opportunity to go on this last little journey of these funny texts through the story that has brought us together and that will keep us together. So offer those words in the name of the God who created, redeemed, and sustained us always. Amen. I think we're going to continue to hear the good word, this time through music. I'm going to invite Diane, Paul, and Kalua to come up and share some good news with us. This is Amazing Grace.
Before we begin, I would like to make a dedication. we speak about saying goodbye to people this morning. Bob Grantham, we have lost, has gone on another journey to be with June. Most of you don't know, but Bob was very instrumental in inviting me to this church. He came to my late wife's funeral, which Buddy conducted for us. And we've been friends ever since. And Bob was always our biggest fan. We sang at his anniversary at the house. And so I want to dedicate this song, and it's very appropriate, to Bob Grantham and his family. We do miss you already.
Thank you so much for that. I agree. Bob would have loved that. And it is now when we're moving into a time of prayer where we share the joys and concerns of our hearts with this community. If you're joining us online, of course, you are welcome to type those into the comments. We'll collect those and be in prayer for those as we go forward. But my first prayer is also just for the family of Bob Grantham and all those who loved him. He passed away on Friday afternoon, and he was at peace. And he was ready. I got to spend some time with him just last week, and so I just celebrate that he went on his own terms, surrounded by his family. We don't yet have word about a memorial service for him, but we'll pass that along. So for now, let's just be in prayer for all those who loved him and will so miss him. You know, I feel as though there's so many things to name about happening in the world right now. I know many of you have been in touch with me with hearts broken for all that's happening in Afghanistan, and the situation there, also in Haiti. I know there are some who have on your hearts communities in New England today as they prepare for a hurricane to be present there. And so we just take all of those concerns and we lift them to God. We ask not only that God's spirit of peace and protection, of wholeness and healing might be in all those places, but also that God might be at work in our own hearts to equip us to respond such as we are able. So we think about those things, and we think about the other prayers that we've not yet named here. We know that God hears and receives them all because of God's grace, and so we enter now with those things into a spirit of prayer. So I would ask that we just settle our hearts and breathe deep, and that we hear these words. God, you are our God, and we are your people. And we are grateful since the time of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob that you have claimed us as your own. We are grateful that you set us in the company of saints past and present, and among those who have made bold witness to your goodness and your faithfulness and your truth. We are also grateful for the ways that your word always opens up new futures, even when we don't see the way forward. God, you know the places in our hearts that dwell in fear. Those of us where places where we are afraid of a future that we cannot control, afraid of losing that or those that are important to us, afraid for the well-being of those we love, including our children, afraid of our past mistakes or future uncertainties. God, as we face these fears and seek to live into the ways of your assurance and your love, we ask that you write the stories of your people deep into our hearts so that we may learn to trust you beyond our fears. We ask you to give us hearts and minds and spirits ready to follow wherever your spirit leads, confident that you will never lead us beyond your loving embrace. God, as we have lifted to you the names of people and places and communities and relationships desperate for your spirit of peace, we ask that you might be there and that you might be in us. We ask all of these things in the name of the one who taught us of your love, whose outstretched arms welcome us always and hold us securely in your grace. Of course, that is Jesus the Christ, who gave us so many gifts, including these words that we might use when we pray to you, saying, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen." Friends, we are bound together by God's Spirit, and we are bound together by prayer, and we are also bound together by sharing this feast. Often in the history of the church, it has been said that we become one body through sharing in this one loaf. And I know our loaf is a little smaller these days, and that our sharing of it has gotten a little more constellated. But I think that truth still holds for us, that as we take a morsel at our house, or this cup here in our seat, or as I take this loaf and share these words with you, that we are in fact bound together as one body, and we are nourished and equipped to continue to lead and continue to walk forward in the way of faith. So that's my invitation to you. Here at Christ Church Uniting, we practice an open table and invite all those who wish to imbibe God's grace to participate here with whatever they have in their hands, such as they would choose. So friends, we remember that it was a long time after the days of Jacob that Jesus, amongst those same people, his great-great-great-great ancestor, took a loaf of bread while sitting at a table with his friends. It was the night he was going to be arrested, and he gave them what sounded at the time like a difficult and a strange blessing. He broke that loaf and he said, "This is my body, and I give it to you." He said, "Do this in order to remember me." It's also after supper that he took a cup. Having said the blessing, he poured it out. He gave it to them. He said, "This cup represents a new way to be in relationship with God. My life and death makes this cup a cup of forgiveness for sin and a cup of blessing for everyone. And so take it, and in this way, remember me." In the Gospel of John, when Jesus said to his friends, "You must eat my flesh and drink of my life in order to live," they said, "What a difficult teaching this is." But Jesus said, "This is how you will remember me." And so we keep coming around this table. We keep asking that the Spirit would be present in these simple things and in us, that they might be nourishment for our bodies, our spirits, and our community. So let us take these things, knowing God's promises abide in them, and let us enjoy them together, for this is the bread of life and the cup of God's blessing. We are grateful for the gifts that have been shared at this table, and now we think about how we want to share our gifts as we go forth from this place. We're inviting you, as always, into a time of discernment about how you will respond to God's good news. That can be in many different ways, but you're invited now to think about whether that is prayers, acts of service, financial contributions to our ministry. However you feel called in your heart to respond, let's make a commitment, an interior commitment, to do that now as we hear the doxology. Please be seated. So we've come to the end of this time, and it's the time when I tell you a bunch of stuff that you already read in your email or that you will do later, but just to note to you in this time things that are happening in the life of the church. Yesterday we had arts and crafts meeting right out here. It was wonderful. We drew, we painted, we printed with leaves. We talked about the importance of re-energizing ourselves with creativity, and you can see some of the fruits of our labor right in the display cabinet right here on your way out if you like that. That will continue on the third Saturday of the month. Next Saturday will be a church cleanup day. This is 8 to noon, right? This is weeding, painting, doing other things. This is come when you can, leave when you must, bring your tools. We'll have some projects for you, so we hope that we can get some help around here with that. If you have any questions about what will be happening that day, you can talk to Beth, David, Ann, or send a note to our office. We're still planning on some sort of intentional fellowship tailgate summer has ended thing in the parking lot next Sunday. So you could bring your bento and just join us out there. You don't have to, should I say this? You don't have to be part of gathering in the community. You could watch at home and then come if you feel more comfortable outside. So let's just plan to hang out. How nice is that? In the parking lot next Sunday after church, and you'll be welcome to bring your food. Aren't these amazing flowers? Have you been looking at them the whole time? I think so. These are from Melody Heidel, and with a special thought for Bob Grantham's family and a celebration of his life. And these are just amazing, and you have the almond blossoms here. So thanks for those and appreciation of ministry here in this church. So I'm grateful for that, Melody. Dana wants you to know that right outside, if you are gathered here in person, and I would imagine if you stop by at an opportune time, you might be also able to take advantage. There are some 3-ply medical masks out here, which we'll be giving away for free. If you feel like you need some extra protection as you're making your way around town, please pick up a box of those. There are also some disaster preparation books, which you can read through in your spare time, also free. Am I missing anything, or does someone have something to contribute for the good of the order? Don't scratch your head while I'm asking for volunteers to tell me things. If not, then we will close our time together. And I'm just so grateful to have music live in our midst. And so we will close with that. What a fellowship about the blessings of being together. So Diane, Kalua, and Marion, let us sing together. What a fellowship, what a joy to claim, leading on the everlasting. would not be a COVID-safe practice, but I just had this song makes me really want to just sort of, you know, embrace the person next to me. I can imagine all of Jacob's sons sort of around his bedside, right, leaning on one another and certainly on the assurance of God's presence. And I hope that we are able to do that in some way as we go forth from this place, being assured that God is, in fact, with us in an everlasting way. And as we go, of course, I must remind you these difficult words that we say every week, which are that life is short and that we do not have long to gladden the hearts of those who travel the way with us. So be swift to love and make haste to be kind. And may the divine mystery, which surpasses all our understanding, but who made us and who loves us and who travels with us, may that God bless us and keep us always in peace. Amen.